It'll be on the back part of that barge.
Riff raff, something else.
Riff raff.
Okay.
Yeah, we have riff raff here too.
Riff raff comes.
Yeah, we do. We have both.
That's the after hours crew.
Riff raff. I've seen a lot of that.
Boy, Reno. Outside of Reno. Can you get on?
Sam, are you on?
Rap?
Rap.
Aren't they big?
Haven't done.
Those boulders. They are huge. But down at our end where our docks are, and then.
All right, Richard, you can start the meeting whenever you're ready.
Where the coast guard, that's where they have.
All right, we'll call the meeting to order. This is a regular commission meeting for the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Wednesday, September 30th, 2023. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Danielle, please.
Larry.
Here.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Richard.
Here. Do we have any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
Part of action item J, there's another option for us to use the state local fiscal recovery funds. So it's just an added option.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah, there's nothing.
Do any of the commissioners need to declare a potential conflict of interest? No.
No.
Okay.
No.
Dan.
I'll try and forget. Take a motion to approve the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
I'm going to go Dan.
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Now we're at approval of minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the regular commissioner meeting Wednesday, August 16th, 2023, and a special commissioner meeting on Thursday, August
31st, 2023. Second. Motion and second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Brings us to public comment. I have one here from Sarah.
Athena. I don't know who that is. I can just say your campaign.
Sure.
Okay. So we all know about the windmill going in and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if any of you have contacted the Gold Beach. I've been talking with Patrick Hollinger. He's one of the four members there at the board to sort of collaborate. Because, you know, the meetings are coming up, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Brookings, Coos Bay, and
Gold Beach,
right. So I'm sure he'll be at the Gold Beach. I don't know if he's going to be at the Brookings one also. But are you guys going to be attending? Have you collaborated with one another to possibly get a letter to them? I was on a virtual call on Monday from 9 a.m. to 3. It was a very long day, just listening to the crap that was going on and voicing my opinion. Many people ask questions of which naturally they don't have answers to. So that's my question to you. Have you guys collaborated? Are you going to be collaborating with them? I talked with Patrick, and he said he'd be more than welcome to you guys formulate a letter together or something together. Even though a lot of you may think it's going to happen anyway, I'm hoping you're not going to give up. I mean, I'm hoping you're still going to go to the meetings and voice your opinions or listen or something, because, as you know, this has nothing to do with us. It's all California that this is all happening to. And, I mean, they've got waters, too, but it seems like nothing's happening in their waters just here. So that's my comments slash questions.
I don't believe we've discussed this with Gold Beach at all that I'm aware of. It's a good idea to do that. I'm going to be at the meeting. I don't know that I'll be, unless you want me to represent the Port of Brookings Harbor, that's up to you guys. I'm going to go speak as a fisherman about the consequences of the sighting of that, particularly for tuna for us. And I have commented at every meeting I have been at in the various, like the OPAC meetings, that we don't know what's going on because they have never come to us. They've never been in this community to have any sort of a formal presentation about what's going on. And one of the people that sits on OPAC represents BOEM. And I told her, I said, that is not okay. I mean, you expect us to go to Newport or Portland or wherever you're having meetings, and that's not going to happen. These people aren't going to go do that. So you need to come to us. It's in our yard. You need to come tell us what's going on. So I don't know whether this, that influenced these meetings, but they're here finally. So we'll get the other issue for half of our community, half of our fishing community, is they have absolutely no data other than some charter boat information on elk or tuna fishing. They have no data whatsoever on recreational fishing. They do on commercial activities because a lot of the commercial boats have to have the vessel monitoring system so they know where they've been, but on recreational, they have no clue. Mm-hmm. So those are all things that we're going to point out to them. So do you have a comment, Al?
Yeah. What is the subject here? Specifically, what's the subject?
The offshore energy windmill platforms. We have a, they have identified what are known as call areas now, and one of them sits from the state line north.
Okay.
And there's one off of Gold Beach, and there's one just a little north of Goose Bay.
Okay.
So those are the energy call areas. So
is that one new, or just a whole bunch of
them? No, these are, ours is, it's 6,000 or 7,000 acres.
Right.
How far offshore?
Well, 13.8 miles, so they say.
Well, they're going 13 to 30 miles, depending.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of getting off of something that's on the agenda, but one of the issues is how deep of water can they anchor them in.
Yeah.
The state has asked them to go out 30 miles to anchor. The industry is resisting that. So, but this is what we're going to find out. The biggest issue for me is whether we are going to be able to transit those. I suspect we won't be able to fish in there, but if they prohibit us from transiting, though, that means in order to go out here 40 miles for tuna, we may have to run 15 to 20 miles north
around it
to get around it to get back down. And from a perspective of at sea maritime safety, among other things, that's not okay.
So. And they did not design a road path for us here.
Well, I don't care if they design a road path, but they put them a mile apart and they orient them north-south, we can run right through the middle of them. I don't
if
care
they
what
let
they
you.
Well.
And that's what you got to find out.
Well, I'll tell you right now, we'll go through them. Short of the Coast Guard sitting out there to stop people,
right.
We'll go through them. But.
Well, but there's a lot of things they haven't tested on that virtual meeting. You know, they haven't tested the wind, 100-mile-an-hour wind. They haven't even simulated it. And so what they want is a contract signed, money, and all that stuff before they even start.
Well, I'm not big into physics necessarily. I understand physics, but I do not understand when you build an object that is as tall as the Eiffel Tower and you put 60 to 70 miles an hour wind against three resistant blades. Somewhere in that process, you're going to have something that will, number one, hold that on the bottom of the ocean, and number two, counterbalance that. But they assure everybody that this is tested technology, which I doubt. I don't know that there's very many floating wind platforms in the world. Most of them are anchored at the bottom.
Yeah, this is going to float.
Yeah, these are floating. And so the only other thing you need to know about windmills is these are Norwegians that own these companies, and they own the They own the overarching companies. They are the ones that develop the technology, so that's where your separate comes from. Okay, thank you. All right, that brings us then to the management financial report.
Okay. So in the month of September, the RV park, staff made small repairs throughout the park, got the sidewalk swept, which if you go out there, it doesn't look like it anymore. We ordered one complete front row pedestal in case one is damaged or needs to be replaced. With the Smith River Complex fire closing 199, we had a lower than expected occupancy rate, and we had multiple refunds to issue. Staff placed an ad for an additional camp host. We have not filled the position. We will continue to look for a qualified candidate that fits our needs. Marina, new spill signs were put out at the top of the ramp. We replaced the main water supply to basin 2. Regular dock walks were checked for loose or broken cleats or other items. County was out to clean their bar grate by the port office. Port staff deployed our turbidity screen while they cleaned the area. Port staff has been working with the county while culvert drainage work is occurring to assure that water quality is maintained and DEQ requirements are followed. Boat launches, they were down as well. Everything that, you know, August is typically a pretty big month for us, and that fire put a damper on it. Shortly after that, I might as well just put it in there now, you'll see that all the fire trucks and fire personnel, the equipment, they're utilizing our kite field and our dry camping area. We are charging them our fair ground rate for the space that they're using. So with that being said, they think they're gonna be here for another 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks potentially. So that income is definitely going to help offset lost revenue from that fire. Telehandler work, we did 0 jobs for any customers. We did have 8 haul-outs. All hoists are back up and operational. Ornstein's was just put back in and re-inspected. So all of them are up and operational. Commercial retail, Bell and Whistle, mobile coffee stand was sold. New owners have come in and wish to keep it, the stand where it is. We have created a new lease, and that will be up for approval today. A new air conditioning unit was installed in Whale Tail Candy Store. Review of all leases that need to be amended or new that will need to be completed. Maintenance crew completed 138 work orders for the month of August. Staff started assigning new gear storage areas for existing customers and using delineators to define their spots. Staff members continue to train and operate travel lifts and telehandlers. The travel lift rust stop and painting was completed. Hauled out our work boat to inspect zinc and bottom paint. Both need to be done, and they're currently hauling the boat out right now to do those. Office staff, there's 19 mortgage renewals, invoicing for gear in leased areas, daily check support grounds and safety issues, communication with CPA on next steps for our upcoming audit. And then there's more of what the office daily tasks are that are attached to this. FEMA, we revised the FEMA construction contracts for Billiter and McLennan, completed procurements and ordered dredge, generator, and pipe. Equipment trailer has been received. Staff formed and poured the first section of concrete footing for the sediment storage basin. Staff then broke down the forms and started another section. We expect to complete those concrete footings by the end of September. Wastewater treatment plant, staff and port engineer continue to work on phase 2 funding. Phase 2 funding will be for the manufacturing of the plant and construction for groundwork. Once that phase 2 package is completed and accepted by the EPA, the port will begin the formal procurement process to select the manufacturer. After we have completed that process, we will then move into the formal procurement process for finding a contractor to do the civil work. That's it. Any questions?
I have one. So since you put the hoist back in because of the dredging is completed, because you told us that the dredge had left for an emergency and that they may be back.
Yes, so we waited, and then I got the call that after further review, they think the Checo River was dredged to a proper enough depth to get it through the year. They then deemed it fine.
Thank you.
Lease rates that we're talking about, those are the current rate. Did we talk at the last meeting or a couple meetings ago about changing those rates? When are they reviewed for change, lease rates?
In July. Yeah. So these, we did raise our rates in July when that started. So every July we'll continue to look at that.
So their new leases are on the new rate?
If it's a brand new lease, yes. If it's an amended lease, it's going off from an old one, they will have had CPI increases, so their leases would have increased as well. But anything new that's coming up will be at a new rate. Yes. Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Who's next?
Stacy.
The safety report. Safety, security, and environmental report for August. Port staff discussed the turbidity screen, safety, and how to install the screen. The turbidity screen is a big yellow.
Turbidity curtain, so when they're cleaning out the culverts and stuff and that muddy water runs down the water, you can't have muddy, it's called turbidity, what is dirty water. So you put a screen out to contain it from migrating out.
There were 5 incidences for the month of August, bringing the year total to 39. Mainly some items were stolen, unfortunately. The police were contacted. 4 ACEs and the fort came across 36 security issues for the month of August. It's pretty cool. And we did complete the discharge monitoring report for our stormwater testing. This is the second of 4 tests that are required.
So it says here that you turned the security footage over to the sheriff's department. Did you actually see the vehicle with the stolen trailer?
Yes.
Was it a travel trailer? What trailer?
It was a
utility trailer.
It was a utility trailer that had a
washer and dryer in it and something else. It looked like, somebody came down and left it, and we didn't know whose it was, so we started tagging it. And then I called them on the third. On the second day, and I was like, you need to come get, because there's a number, we finally found a full note on it underneath the stripe that said, sorry, we had no choice, this is our phone number. So I called them and said, you need to move it, and then they came down to move it, and it was already gone, and they asked, we took it, and I'm like, cool, here we go. And then we finally, after looking at the cameras, then you can see an unidentified vehicle hook up to it and take it, she's like, I didn't take it, so. Happened pretty quick. It happened in the middle of the day, too, didn't it?
It happened at 8 o'clock at
8
night.
8 o'clock at night.
Pretty quiet.
Okay.
Travis?
Yes.
Question. When it comes to, you said that we installed curtains for the stormwater drain cleaning.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be the responsibility of the parties taking that out, with this, like, in this case, the county?
The county is in charge of their turbidity. Because of what they're doing also helps us with the lack of sediment that, the buildup of sediment that keeps coming. It's in our interest to work with the county to make sure that we're, everybody's on the same page on when they're doing it and we're following the rules. Because when they break wind, if they have too much turbidity going in, we're the ones that are going to get the phone call first. So it's just in everybody's interest. It's not a lot out for the port, just to make sure everybody's playing by the rules.
Well, yeah, that's fine. I was just curious if who was on the hook for that turbidity. So if something happens upstream, the port's not on the hook for it.
No, we're not. And the county has in the past been fined for what they were doing. And some of our remedy for that was, how about you guys just ask us? And, you know, we have the turbidity curtains. We have the knowledge of putting them in. So it's just kind of a team effort.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, for the month of August financial summary, our unrestricted cash and equivalents total $332,427. Our restricted cash and equivalents total $414,631, leaving our total checking and savings at $747,058. Our profit and loss total revenues for August was $433,790. Our expenses were $637,537, leaving our net income at a negative $203,747. A lot of that is reimbursement coming back once they get approved for payment.
So of this $637,000, a lot of that is reimbursable.
Right. A lot of that went to FEMA expenses that we're waiting.
We should have put that down, but I have it in my upcoming with an information, but to date we spent $737,000 on FEMA equipment, and I think currently we have around $550,000 out that is coming back to us. And what's not included in this, we've already gotten one reimbursement back for the tractor, right? The tractor. So they turned around that reimbursement for us. I think it was in 50 days, it's 50, 60 days. So we got it sooner than expected. So we spent a lot of money, but we are getting it back sooner than we expected to. So.
Yeah, well, I just want to make sure we got that on the record. So,
yeah, it is our FEMA expenditures.
Because, you know, just a casual glance at that, you go, well, that's not such a good deal.
Yeah.
But this, you know, we got to admit, this budget is going to be an unusual budget just because of the total amount. And the expenditure reimbursement process, it's going to be confusing.
Yeah.
Overall, our general fund program revenues was a positive $51,777. So we are bringing money in our other areas. Total income for all funds is currently at 6.7%, the general fund revenues at 20.2%. Total expenditures for all funds is at 8.3%, with general fund expenditures at 15.2%.
Okay, thank you. Any comments? Questions?
Nope.
Good job. Yeah. Motion to accept the management financial report. Motion to accept the financial report as presented.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to the natural hazard mitigation plan review and more comment here.
Okay, so this is an updated hazard mitigation plan. We have gone through and updated the tables, kind of updated the cost of the projects, re-estimated them, updated some of our maps. We did our mitigation action list. Did everybody have a chance to review it? Not much different than from what our other one is, other than being updated. Is there any?
I can't admit a real thorough dive into the whole thing, but I did look at it.
Okay.
Just for the record, this is required by the state or?
Through OEM for us to be able to utilize a hazard mitigation. So when there's declared disasters, this is what makes us eligible for mitigation grants. Along the lines of what we're doing with our paving and storm drains, that's hazard mitigation from the FEMA disasters that we're currently on. So
as long as we have an approved plan on file, then we're eligible for federal funding.
Yes. So when you go through the table contents, you know, with this, we have our mission statement, our mitigation plan, the benefit cost analysis for each one of our projects, and then number 8 on it, our supplemental documentation. That is all of the drawings that we've approved, in particular to the dredging program, our wastewater treatment, design and construction, and it just keeps going through, boardwalk, our H pile, our boardwalk issues that we're having, our bigger, better seawall at the RV park. Those are all things that the travelers ramp is another one that's on there. So those are we have all of our engineering backup for it, which makes our projects more complete, I guess, when we go to get this mitigation money or apply for those grants. So yes, this is a very constantly updated document, but this is what we have to have to be qualified for hazard mitigation for any FEMA declared disasters.
So one thing I noticed in there that kind of struck me is they're talking about storm tsunami surge height in 1883, and I just wonder how they know. I don't think there were very many people here in 1883, but anyway. Okay. Any other?
Travis?
Yes.
Where did Jack get his material for his research?
A lot of some of the stuff that's in here is also pulled out of our strategic business plan. What part of this?
I'm looking at page 6 of the package that you gave us for this.
What page?
It's got the figure 1.4. Page 50 of the packet.
50.
It says in 1970, an 1,800-foot long, 18-foot high protective dike was built. Mr. Aiken, I'm sorry, I have to claim that Mr. Aiken, to my knowledge, is in error on that page. And so I'm wondering where he got his information at.
So the jetty that separates us from the river, the basin one from the river?
That is correct.
I would have to ask Jack where he got that information exactly. What?
I'm curious because I know in 1970 that dike, when my parents purchased their first vessel that was moored there against that dike was long since completed in that, and that's why I have a question about that.
I would have to get back to you on that and find out exactly where Jack pulled that information from.
I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
No.
All right.
Thank you for updating it.
Brings us to the action items. Action item A, approved signature for bank account. Pretty straightforward. We're going to remove Ken Range as the signer at the Umpqua Bank and add Daniel Fritz. Okay.
So I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'm making a motion to remove Ken Range as a signer on all Umpqua Bank accounts for the Port of Brookings Harbor. Do we need to do these separately?
I would do them separately.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. And Larry seconded.
Okay. Motion and second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Second motion. to add Daniel Frazier as a signer on all Umpqua bank accounts for the Port of Brookings Harbor.
Second. Motion and second, Danielle.
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. This is action item B, the Pacific Fishing Lease Agreement.
So this Pacific Fishing, it's for the vessel Pacific Hooker. They currently are renting the space next to the boat shop and down by the boatyard. They do have a new captain, and they've gone through and cleaned stuff up and are keeping it really tip-top, in good shape. So we went with a three-year lease with a renewal option of one additional three-year term.
This is the place we fixed the door on?
Yep.
Okay. Motion to approve Pacific Fishing LLC lease agreement for the warehouse storage beginning October 1st, 2023 through September 30th, 2026.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item C, South Coast Tours LLC lease amendment one.
Before we do that, did you have any public comments at all for the hazard mitigation plan?
No, I did not receive
any. You didn't receive any? Okay. I just needed to make sure that was put on the record that we didn't have any public comments. So sorry about that. Yes, South Coast Tour lease amendment number one. They have the kayak set up here down on the by the launch ramp.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lease amendment, so he's already used his initial term of the lease, and he is utilizing his additional three-year term.
Okay.
Motion to approve South Coast Tours LLC lease amendment number one.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yeah. Brings us to action item B, Boat Shop and More, lease amendment number two.
So this goes with years did he have? This is his second term. This is his second of three. Additional terms that he's utilizing. He had a three-year lease with three additional terms. So this is amendment number two. Nothing's changed with this building.
And this reflects the changes we made about the boatyard and all that stuff, right? He operated the boatyard under the...
When we took that back over, we corrected that lease. Okay.
Motion to approve Boat Shop and More LLC lease agreement number two.
Second.
Have a motion and second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item E, Sludge and Stone lease agreement.
This is a new lease. All the options for renewals were exhausted for Slugs and Stones. This is a three-year term with two additional three-year terms for them. And they own the building. They lease the footprint.
Motion to approve Slugs and Stones Ice Cream Cones lease agreement beginning November 1, 2023 through October 31st, 2026.
Second.
A motion and second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Jay Sloan Hair Studio. Lease amendment number one.
Jay Sloan. This is also an amendment. This is her 1 3-year additional term. So this will go through June 30th, 2026.
Okay. Motion to approve Jay Sloan Hair Studio LLC lease amendment number one.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Boardwalk Mail Service, lease amendment number one.
Okay, their previous lease went through May 31st, 2023. They have one additional 3-year term left that will take them through May 31st, 2026.
Okay. Motion to approve Boardwalk Mail Services LLC lease amendment number one.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Hungry Clam lease amendment number one.
Okay, the Hungry Clam, their previous lease went through May 30th, 2023. They had also a one more additional 3-year term. This will take them through May 31st, 2026.
Let me do one. I make a motion to approve the Hungry Clam lease amendment number one. Second.
All right, Richard.
We have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yeah. I don't want you guys to go worse than doing all that.
Thank you.
We're at action item I, the Atlas Coffee Stand lease agreement.
Okay. So these are the new owners of the coffee stand that I've recently purchased it from Bell & Whistle. I kept the lease rate the same at $500 a month. This lease will be for 1 year, going through September 20th, 2024. And they will have an additional 1 year term that they can exercise at the end of this lease. So I have talked to them. They're really great people. They do plan on having the coffee shop open 5 days a week. It sounds like their days closed might be Wednesdays and Saturdays, but they weren't completely sold on that. But they do plan on having it open throughout the winter and all the time. Is there any questions, concerns?
Travis, why a 1-year lease?
Because I wanted to make sure that they had enough. A year was enough for them to see if this was going to be a viable business for them. And then, you know, if they did decide, and it also gives us a chance to, after a year, to determine if we would like to continue that amendment or not for an additional year. Start small, and if it goes over really well, then I would entertain a longer lease after that.
Okay. Thank you.
People run businesses here before, or do you know them at all?
I think they're new to town. They recently moved here, but they did own a couple of other small businesses previously.
Not that have been there, but just curious. Okay. All right. Motion to approve Atlas Coffee Stand lease agreement beginning on September 21st, 2023.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. Now we get to action item J, the State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund.
Yes. So as you guys hopefully you remember, the county has given us, you know, $50,000 that was for state and local fiscal recovery funds due to the coronavirus time. The guidance that's put out is called the final rule. It's put out by the U.S. Treasury. That's kind of your guideline of what you can use to spend the money on. So I went through that and kind of made a list for today of different options that I see that we could use that money for. One we've talked about is use it towards wastewater treatment plant matching funds. The total EPA wastewater treatment plant matching funds is $875,000. Obviously, $50,000 would just be a push towards that number. Upgrade broadband throughout the port to increase Wi-Fi coverage across Basin 1 and 2. Another option is replace worn or damaged catch basins in the retail parking lot. Construct an access road in the crab pot storage area to improve stormwater condition, accessibility, and reduce future road cost maintenance. So it's paving where the creek building area is a vehicle traffic. A, it slows down stormwater, and B, it cuts down on the TSS with forklifts and such driving through it for the dirt and mud in the dirt parking lot. And then another one that I just recently added to it is a tsunami siren. I went through a couple different companies. We found one that works, that I think can work really well for us. The reason I put that on there is that we haven't had a tsunami siren in a while.
Right.
And I'm not sure when the county is going to be able to get something like that back up and running. And one of the questions I had was from the fire crew was, when does the tsunami siren go off? Because they, you know, obviously they're trying to plan for evacuations and other stuff. And I didn't have a good answer for them. You know, you can download an app that goes to your phone, but we have a lot of tourism that comes here. We have a lot of people here, and we don't really have a very effective way, if something were to happen, to notify them in the event something was coming. So that's why I added that to this. So kind of open it up to ideas, thoughts, possible avenues.
Well, my initial reaction is that a tsunami siren is clearly the purview of the county emergency management system, and they should be doing that. Having said that, I have thought, since I talked to you earlier about this a little bit, and I do think that in a operation that attracts the public to stay by the ocean, and where we have a lot of visitors that we want to have down there, I'm not willing to assume that the county is going to take care of them. We should take care of them ourselves. So even though that's a lot of money, to my way of thinking, it is the right thing for us to do to protect the public. And like I say, I don't think we're not responsible for it, but I think in the long run, we should probably take the responsibility on behalf of the people that come here and that we ask to come here. That's my thoughts.
So, Richard, that answered my question, I guess, is the port is not responsible, doesn't have to have this siren. State, county, federal government doesn't say Port of Brookings Harbor must have the tsunami siren.
No, it does not.
The tsunami siren is the responsibility of the county for city emergency services, whatever that's called.
I'm not exactly sure what they are required to have.
Okay.
We have not had a tsunami siren for, I think as far back as I can remember, hearing one might have been 2014. Maybe 15
years ago.
Yeah,
I remember in 2015 when I first started coming here, I heard them and then they disappeared.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, so regardless, whatever it is, me personally, I am in favor of the tsunami siren. You know, when I got asked that question, being said we do attract a large crowd of tourism, people that might not be aware, and regardless of whose responsibility it is, we have an opportunity to put something up for what I consider a public safety. You know, the rest of every, you know, Brookings and Harbor, you know, not many things land in the tsunami zone. We are right in it. I don't know if that's part of why it hasn't been brought up. I don't know. I don't know why it hasn't came, but this was just an opportunity that came up that we could put something in that the port can, the port will have maintenance costs, you know, with it, but it is a safety concern. So I won't beat that to death. There is other options on here.
If we were to install this, how does the notification work that there is a tsunami coming? I mean,
it is tied to the NOAA weather alert system.
The siren.
The siren.
So it's going to go off irrespective of our action.
Yes. Yeah, it is not. There is, you know, it's a pretty smart system. You can, you know, if we had something else that, you know, somewhat similar to what happened in Maui with the fires, you can manually push those buttons for other reasons that you might deem an emergency. There is a manual trigger for that you can do. And you can set it for multiple different things. Typically, they're set for warnings. You have warnings, advisories, and there's four different categories. The reason they don't recommend advisories is because you can kind of really quickly stir a pot, you know, with the tsunami siren going off without that potential. If it went to a warning, that's what would trigger that.
Well, I think this community has two pretty realistic threats that would be a tsunami and a fire. And that's why I was going to ask you if we could activate it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing that I thought as far as activation might be some during the 4th of July when we've got the port filled with people and we might have to get them out somehow. But, okay.
The cost is assessed $11,000 or is it?
No, that one was kind of us shopping around, you know, seeing. The $11,000 one doesn't have everything we need.
Okay, so do you think the cost would go over what you would be awarded?
I don't think so. The number that we were given at $51,176, that includes them coming and installing it. That included them renting a boom truck to get up to it. I told them that we had a telehandler and we could help, you know, do some of the installation to cut down on cost to get it below $50,000, and they said they would be able to do that.
Okay.
So, I think in here, yeah, right, a couple pages back from the handout that I gave you is kind of a good layout of what's all included with it.
Right.
And there is some adjustment for their traveling and how much they have to do actually when they're here with renting equipment to get up that height and set it.
Did you ask them about its applicability in a marine environment? Is it going to hold up, you think?
And did they have these in other marine environments? This company that we use, ASC, I asked that, you know, they've been in business for over 100 years. They have these systems in multiple different places. And in multiple different applications, you know, there could be a mill where they have lunch bells or sirens that they put up and you're manually pushed. They also gave us a map of how far we could expect to see hear the siren and what decibel levels. So it definitely covers our port and it will reach out over into Brookings and all the way up to Shopping Center Avenue and, you know, up by the case. So,
we have nothing now.
Well, my main thing was not having an answer for them. and finding out that you have to download an app, sign up to get the alerts when you're here. You know, we've gone a long time without having one, and it's kind of getting to the point how long are we going to wait until we have something up and running?
Or have something happen.
Well, maybe if we approve this, then maybe one of the things we should do is notify the county and the city that we're going to put one in and ask them to, I've got to put this nicely, ask them to make sure that they're not unprepared for moving people out of here. So in other words, could you put together a plan if this thing goes off for how people are going to get out of here, because we can't control that. Having just come from a very crowded environment, you got to have some kind of plan to get people out. Because we all know when this siren goes off, it's going to attract people down here. They're going to want to come down here based on the last one we had. So, in other words, if we do this, maybe we ought to reach out and say, you guys ought to come up with a plan. So if we're putting equipment up, if it goes off, you better be ready to put roadblocks and traffic control up here quick and get them out of here.
If this is approved and we go this direction, I will be coming back to you guys with more information on it, and I will talk to the county, the city, let them know what we are doing, and see if I can work with Danielle and we can put together an evacuation type plan or something that maybe we can incorporate into a sign. I know we had, I don't know who we talked to, they gave us new tsunami warning signs, throughout, and they are working on tsunami evacuation routes. The map that they always give to show the green, the orange, and the red zones of where it is, they are reconfiguring that map now to show the exit points, and then that's something that can be made into a sign that can be posted, at the RV park, you are here, this is your evacuation route. I've even went through to talk to them about, I think it's abandoned, where they paint the lines. When you drive across it, you can see where their tsunami zones are. So there's a lot of, obviously a lot of improvement that can happen with evacuations and tsunami alerts and, things like that, that we can incorporate in the event that we actually have. There's room for improvement.
Okay. I'm wondering if maybe we should table this and look further into everything we've just discussed. It seems as though there's an awful lot of working parts that we haven't addressed yet. Personally, I'm uncomfortable spending the money without addressing all those issues up front. I guess
my notion is that right now what we're doing is undertaking an action that would allow us to notify our people that are here. I don't know that we're going to ever be able to have any control over the city and county. The best I think we can do is tell them, all right, we got this thing in place, but it goes off. How are we going to get them out of here, and then see if we can't start a conversation about that? Because obviously we have, my view, if we're going to get people out of here, we have to put nothing but traffic on these roads going one way. No ingress at all. Get them up the hill, up the hill, up the hill, and out of here. But we know darn good and well when we get them up the hill and up the hill, there's going to have to be somebody up there to direct traffic to keep it moving. Otherwise, we're going to stop things.
I think a lot of, if that were to happen, I think we need to remember the port's not going to be setting up roadblocks. The port's not going to be setting up or saying who can and can't come here. As far as I'm concerned, if that goes off, all of our employees will be following the same suit. You are all heading up. I think through this, it would be, if we're putting one up, we talk with the sheriff's department and the county, and you know, what is the plan that happened, you know, and work through making a plan with them that can be effective and put into an evacuation plan. But I think the main concern that I have is that we don't have anything. And if we want to turn around and try and check all the boxes right now at once, we're going to climb right over $50,000. So it's some of the way that if we want to use this, this will get us the siren, it will get us the alert system. That's what it's going to give us. And then we can continue building on that for future agreements with the county or, you know, how we're going to do it. Or, you know, I mean, the other thing is, too, is there is other options here. And I know we beat this one to death, but, you know, the crab pot storage, you know, putting a, sorry, I don't have, I kind of just jumped right there. So well, this is a stepping stone to many more things that need to happen.
Looking at your list of other projects, it occurs to me they're all important. So it occurs to me that there may be other opportunities to do some of those things as part of different projects. I don't see much opportunity here for this to be roped into anything. So this is kind of a standalone in my view, and that we have the money that's been provided for us. So if we do this, we'll accomplish this, and it won't really detract from anything else we're trying to do. You know, and as far as paving for crab pots and things like that, we're, who knows, when we may get some other opportunity, infrastructure bills, things like that that come along, hazard mitigation things that show up from EPA, we might be able to use that. This one, to me, I think is kind of a, it's out there by itself, and we're in a unique position to be able to pay for it and accomplish this. So I think that at least my preference would be is that we spend that $50,000 on this project.
Dan, you got any input?
Well, first off, have you had the opportunity to talk with the county's Office of Emergency Management to see if they have any kind of plan in place for a tsunami evacuation?
For our area, for Port of Brookings, if they have a plan for us, I don't know.
Okay. And where would we, if we were to do this, where would you propose putting up the pole for the to set the sirens on?
Using the existing pole that's in Basin 2 by the Kite Field bathroom.
And that's a wooden pole, am I correct?
Yes, it is.
Have we checked to make sure that it is not rotten over the time since the last one was put in, since it was installed?
I have not checked the, no.
I like the idea of the siren personally. I think it's something that could benefit the community. But I think those other things there, the County Office of Emergency Management, as well as the structural integrity of that pole, need to be looked at before we jump off into this. But I think the money would be best spent with the siren personally.
I have more concerns that I would like to share.
Mm-hmm.
This was put in front of us yesterday and we're voting on it today. Personally, I'm uncomfortable with that. It's put in front of us as a siren, but basically we're choosing where to spend $50,000. It looks as though we're being led to get the siren. There's a list that you thankfully put together of other things we could do. My understanding is the county's responsible for this, not us. I know we're doing it as good stewards of the people that are here. Again, I'm thinking tabling or doing something else. Will the county or the city, state, anybody be able to help us pay for it, if we even asked? I mean, if we're not responsible for doing it, why would we pay 100% of it? I'm just uncomfortable. Like I said, I saw it yesterday. We're voting on it today. It's for a siren. But basically, the underlying theme is where are we going to spend this $50,000 we have? And we briefly went over some of the things, but we spent 20 minutes, a half hour discussing a siren. So that's where I am.
We don't have to go with any of these. We can table it, you know, again, and I would encourage you guys to look through. If you guys don't have it, I will print off the U.S. Treasury, the final rule, which is the guidance of what we, how you can spend it. It's about 44 pages long. And, you know, we can come back in the next meeting and look and see, you know, what other options or ideas, given those criteria, that we can try and fit this under. You know, another one that is just kind of a port benefit to have is, you know, the Beacon broadband, you know, broadband internet throughout our entire basin. I mean, it's something that could be useful. I mean, we don't have a lot of Wi-Fi anywhere throughout this port. I mean, our RV park has it. By going to a Wi-Fi system, it would broaden our abilities to possibly utilize the cloud for our port system, I guess, that would allow us to do more point of sales. You know, you could be out on the dock and take people's money and be able to use the internet to access our system. The other one is replacing worn and damaged catch basins in the retail parking lot. Stormwater control is another option that we have. The catch basins that are out in our parking lot have not ever been replaced. We have added a couple out there. They are definitely starting to show signs of wear. Although, you know, the parking lot is sometimes you can take catch basin by catch basin. Yes.
When does this money have to be spent by, Travis?
I don't think it has to be spent until 2025.
Funds must be expended by December 31st, 2026.
26. Sorry, yes.
Money and time.
So.
And if you're wondering why I'm bringing it up now, it's because we've had it for over a year now, and I'm just trying to make plans for it. When we did our budget, I budgeted us to spend it. So this is just kind of my first stab at giving us an opportunity to look at options to spend that money.
I have a suggestion. I suggest that we suspend discussion of this until the next regular meeting and have an opportunity for you to talk to the city and county. My thought is that if we're going to be a standalone here and they're saying, well, okay, fine, get a siren, but we're not part of the deal, then we'll spend our money somewhere else. But if they understand and agree to start working on a plan, or if they have a plan or some of the questions that have come up, then we'll know that answer too. Anybody have any concerns about doing that?
No, I think that's a good idea, and it'll give Travis the time to check the poll and answer questions that...
Okay. You okay with that, Dan?
I was going to say, I'll make a motion to table it until next month.
I don't even know that we need to do that. Can't we just suspend it till next time?
Yeah, you can take no action on it and just say, right. We'll come back to it later.
Yeah, by suspending it, it kind of leaves it open for the next bill. Okay. Action item K, amended and restated agreement for professional services. This is with Jack Aiken and EMC Engineer Scientist.
His contract is up actually today. So continuing his contract, his prices are still the same. His price has not gone up. He's currently working on a lot of our projects that we have going right now. I see no reasons why we don't continue it for another year.
Uh-huh. I agree.
So the $100,000 is just a cap. You will not, in the course of a year, he would not charge more than
$100,000 no matter what he's doing for us?
Not for no matter for under this contract, which would be for port, port general engineering. You know, we have a contract for him for FEMA.
Right.
So he has his own. So it does. It's a contract specifically to general port engineering.
This is the one that handles when you call them up and say we've got a failing tiling.
Tiling, come out and look at it. Yes.
As opposed
not
to
project specific. Project.
Exactly.
So
we will be.
The other stuff will be billed his hourly rate or whatever that contract for that.
Yes.
Project
yes.
is.
Yes. And well, his rate for the other contracts are the same.
I comment in the past, we've had many, not many, but some conversations here from the public about Jack and having an engineer and those sort of things. You know, other people have engineers. If you're going to build something, they'll have their own engineering, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. From what I've seen in the years I've been here now and what I've experienced, having somebody like Jack Aiken is a huge asset to us.
Yeah.
Not just because he's familiar with the port, but because he's familiar with all the permitting and familiar with all the hoops, bells and whistles that we're going to have to go through. And it, you know, I can't imagine starting over with a new engineer. I just can't. Would be horrendous.
Or per project, different engineer.
Yeah. Okay. Ready for action?
Motion to approve draft amendment and restated agreement for professional services to EMC Engineering Engineers Scientists LLC from September 21st, 2023 to September 21st, 2024.
Second.
Motion second, Danielle.
Dan? No.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to the agreement for security services.
Okay, so 4ACES has their current contract is up. They did present us with a rate increase. They were currently charging $46.35 per hour. That has been rounded up to $50 per hour. And then after our call outs went from $69.53 to $75 per hour. It's an increase. I think it's a reasonable increase given everything that has been going up, wages, gas, everything. So our options are limited in the security department as well. Lately, they have been doing a really good job. They've been showing up on time, doing what they're supposed to do. So I would recommend keeping them for another year.
Well, that answers my question for whether or not we're satisfied with them.
Just out of curiosity, do we get a lot of call-outs off hour? What's a call-out?
If during the day, if there has been times where I haven't been able to get police here or something, I can call them. If we have an added extra event, if it's anything beyond the 2 hours that they typically do the 10 and 4 o'clock. You know, they work, they're here from 10 to 11 p.m. and usually 3 to 4 a.m. And so events, festivals, anything like that, that we would want to use their security services for, it would be at $75 per hour.
Per person?
Per person, that's there, yes.
Travis, why do we have set hours?
Because the port closes at 10 p.m. to the general public. The RV park closes at 10 p.m. The gates get closed at 10 p.m. The bathrooms get closed at 10 p.m. And then the bathrooms are reopened at 4 p.m. or 4 a.m., which has helped us cut down tremendously on transients using our bathrooms during the middle of the night. And they patrol the...
That I understand, but...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
My question is, why do we have set hours? I mean, at 10 o'clock, I understand them coming through and locking a gate or something like that. But why are we having them come by during those set hours? My experience with security is and has been that if you have established hours and people learn those times, that is when they will not be present or they will be hiding instead of being and avoiding those times. So why aren't they more flexible with the security company coming through?
Security company is very limited on employees. We're not their only person that they're serving. 10 p.m. is a very very busy time at 10 p.m. making sure that, you know, people are out of the RV park, people are off, you know, that are parked around the basins are off. And it also gives us a list of authorized vehicles that and unauthorized vehicles if they don't have a parking pass that we issue to all mortgage customers. More than likely they're there doing something they shouldn't be doing, or they're staying on a boat or somehow, some way, more than likely avoiding our rules. 4 a.m. is when they close, is when they're pretty much done for the night. So we're kind of their last stop. And I wanted to make sure that the bathrooms were reopened in enough time for fishermen going out early, anybody that might, you know, be starting to come back in, to the port. 4 a.m. seems like a reasonable time for us to open them so the general public and the intended users would have access.
Thank you.
Well, just for the record and part of the discussion, we've in the past had a lot of discussions about security, about having our own security staff, the cost-benefit ratio versus, you know, the advantage we'd have to having somebody here. But in, you know, in reflection on what we've done, this is about the most feasible way for us to do this and have something here. You know, I hope we can't necessarily equate this with police coverage. They're serving a function for us. They're doing, as you said, they clear things out, make sure nobody's left behind when they lock the gates and all those kind of things. But my preference, if I were king and we had a ton of money, I'd have our own security people. But knowing what kind of training is required for that, what kind of equipment we'd have to do for that, that's adding two extra employees that, while functional from a security standpoint, don't really contribute much to the everyday operation of the port, and we can't afford that. So, you know, this is probably, well, not probably, this is the only option we have that really makes any sense, that's feasible for us to do.
And I should put it out there too, so we pay for 2 hours of service at night. They're typical, obviously, they spend more time here in the summer. We have more cars to get out. So on the days that we don't have as much going on, there's not as many vehicles, they do come and do random patrols in the evening, but they have been under, they are not to go over 2 hours a night. So sometimes, you know, getting people moved on from the RV park and moved out, and if they run into an issue down there, you know, we're still paying for that, which sometimes will cut down on how many extra little pass-throughs, you know, that they'll do.
Well, I think the point I was trying to make is that we're not really employing them for theft, security, and that kind of thing. I mean, they're going to see the obvious. If you're going to deter people from stealing things from boats or stealing bikes, you're going to have to be here most of the time. And run a regular random patrol schedule, and that's not really what we're paying for. We're paying for the others.
Lock the gates, get people out.
I guess I would say the
adhere office. To the rules.
Yeah.
Well, I would hope that all the dollars that we put into these cameras have deterred some of the people from not doing what they're doing. Hopefully.
One could hope that that's what's happening. It does, you know, on a regular basis, the cameras prove themselves to be useful. So,
well, we discussed that when we put them in, that deterrence depends on prosecution. And so if we're getting some prosecutions as a result of the camera footage, great. If we're not, and I don't know the answer to that.
It would even be to the point we need more.
First thing we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we've definitely gone where they are. I mean, our initial 25 cameras, you know, obviously are looking at our basins really well, our parking lots really well, but they're limited. You know, we have a lot of real estate out here, so eventually over time, you know, the retail area would be nice to have cameras kind of focusing in a little bit tighter on high traffic areas that we found where it's kind of like, yeah, you can see it, but it'd be nice if it was right there. You can see it. So it's all future things. Our system, we can add up to 60 cameras on there. So we have lots of extra room. They're just expensive things.
Well, you can add a vaporizer beam to them, put that up here, and I'll vote for it. Okay, let's deal with this. Action item L. Motion to approve draft agreement for security services with Four Aces Security Solutions from September 21st, 2023 to September 21st, 2024.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to, well, before we leave action items, I'm not sure how exactly to do this, but we did discuss this meeting that's coming up with Bohm, and I'm going to attend. I would be more than happy to stand up and represent the port at that meeting, and my representation would be to them that if Bohm or any of the contractors have expectations for port services during the course of building and maintaining these things, they should come to us now and tell us what they want, and let us try and decide whether we can provide it for them or whether we need to gear up for it, because we don't know that either. And I know they can't get anything that they're going to use to install these in this port, but I think there will be a lot of service vessels that will come in and out of here. So if we know they're coming and they're bringing a 100-foot boat, then we're going to need to make sure we have transient dock space available for them. If they're going to want fuel, we're going to want to know about that. And if they have to load things on and off of that, they're going to have to know about that to see whether we have lift capacity for what they want, or whether the telehandler has it. But anyway, that's the kind of thing I would present to them. But I don't want to do that without having talked to you about it.
Would you need board approval as well?
I think so, yeah. If I'm going to speak on behalf of the board, yeah, I would.
And how would we add that to the agenda? Since we've already amended it, do we do it again?
As long as we're saying we're adding an action item for Richard to represent us at the Bohm meeting, it's as simple as that. We can add it. You just have to say it clearly what we're doing.
Okay.
I'm okay with that. My question is the port going to take us, in your representation, would the port take a stance of pro or con for the towers themselves? Or we're just going to look for, if it happens, these are what we would need from you.
Well, you know, I thought about that. I thought about, should some ports have written? From my perspective, I'd like to get a little better understanding of what this is about before we take it on. Because if we're going to take action to write a letter to Bohm saying we don't agree with this, we're going to have to say, here's why. And at this point, I don't know yet. Obviously, it's going to have an impact on fishing, which is going to have an impact on port operations and everything else. But I want to know a little more detail about why it is we're going to object to this, other than the fact that it's something new and we don't like it. And I base that, and I hate to keep mentioning my past, but I fought, well, I shouldn't put it that way. I dealt with the gold mining industry for 20 years in Nevada, trying to figure out what's going on. And the only effective thing I ever saw was when you had a specific item that affected you and you voiced that concern, then if they didn't take action, you had to bump up to somebody that could, like a congressional representative. To just generally object to something because you don't like it, you can do that, you can feel good about it and have it on the record, but in terms of effectiveness, it doesn't really do anything. So, long story short, if we're going to take action in opposition to this, I want to have my quiver full.
So you're basically just going to say, hey, if you're going to use the port, we need to know what, when, where, and how.
Yes. I'm going to say that. You know, don't make expectations that you can do all kinds of stuff here. Let us know first, and if necessary, we'll gear up for it or try and find funding to gear up for it. But don't drop this on us the day before the boat shows up, kind of thing. So that would be what I would represent to them.
Richard, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Have any of you looked at their website?
Yes.
We've.
And so there is a time frame of what they're going to do and all that. Okay.
Well, yeah, but my reaction to that was, so there's somebody sitting somewhere writing this stuff down, and again, you know, they haven't even been here, formally been here to talk to us, and that's why I think it's important that we start engaging with whomever. It won't be Bohm probably we're talking to. It's probably going to be the people that do the leasing, but nonetheless, at this meeting would be the time to get it on the record to say, hey, you know, whoa. Before you make all these plans, if you intend to use the port, and they may not, but if you do intend to use the port, you need to give us fair warning and fair opportunity to see where we're headed. And like I said, the impacts of the fishing, you know, I've been following this for a long time, and there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions. This is a bad thing. We don't like it. But I don't really know what we don't like yet, because I haven't been told that, no, you can't fish here. Because in my opinion, I mean, you turn to recreational guys loose, we'll fish them. And when I was back in Virginia 2 years ago, I was talking to people from Rhode Island that have these things, but they're anchored to the bottom. And I said, how you guys like them? They said, we'd like more. Get us all you can get us, because they attract fish like crazy, and it's the best fishing we've ever had. So, hence my hesitation to just globally comment that we don't like it because it's something we've never seen before. I want some specifics.
Quick question. Curry Electric.
Richard?
Who's Curry Electric? Well, so the issue with this stuff is, and we're dealing with this at OPAC right now, is we've amended the territorial sea plan, which is the 3 mile area, to discuss how these cables are going to come onshore and what's going to happen. Do they have to be buried? On and on and on. There's not, I mean, I don't know that there's a real clear pathway described for exactly what happens when they get here. I do know that you can't just run the cable up and hook it into the power grid and say, here you go. Mm-hmm. It's got to be hooked in a way that has capacity to handle the power, and it's going to move it. One of the things I have heard about this Southern Oregon one is that it isn't going to come ashore in Oregon at all.
Right.
It's going to hook up to the California grid, and then they'll take it ashore in California. The other thing that, you know, everybody's talking about, well, this will be great because we're going to have redundant power opportunities here. The power is owned by the people that generate it. So they sell it at their discretion, not Coos Curry or not anybody else. So to me, the benefits of this certainly have an environmental implication, but in terms of having a fixed, solid, good snap power supply for Curry County, I don't see that in there.
No.
And
not with it.
And I'm not really sure why they don't have it in California. We've got waters there too. That was one of my questions during I didn't really get an answer to that. I didn't get an answer to if there's a repair that needs to be done. You've got 60 mile an hour winds and you can't get out there. When do you repair them? And they didn't have an answer to that. So
well, again, going back to my gold mining history, my concerns are not just that, but what happens if they break loose? What happens if the, for whatever reason, the company goes belly up and they're abandoned? There's a lot of details in this that you got to know about. But I can't imagine. I mean, just picture this for a minute. Just a 300-foot long blade washing up on Cape Sebastian. Now, how on earth are you going to get that out of there? Who's going to do that? And looking at the one, my son used to live in Mojave, which is covered with them. Blades coming off is not unusual. They come off all the time. Those things catch fire all the time.
Yeah, there you go.
So there's a ton of issues here that, but that's again, you know, if you want to comment about on this about what we used to call what ifism, you're going to get a lot of that out there, but they're going to go, nah, that's just noise. You got a specific issue, a problem, bring it to us, but don't just make noise. So, anyway, let's deal with this.
What do you need?
A motion to authorize me to go speak on behalf of the Port of Bridgecorp.
I'll make a motion.
Before we move on, Dan, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I got a question for Rick. First off, when these were originally proposed, it was part of Governor Brown's plan to have, I think it was 3 gigawatts or megawatts or whatever the hell it was, brought into the Oregon power grid system, with it coming ashore at or approximately just north of Bandon. When did they change bringing this onshore in California?
I don't know, Dan. I'm just telling you stuff I've heard through all the meetings I've been to. And when they pulled the Bandon call area out, I don't know if they had if their original intent was to tie Coos Bay and Brookings and Bandon together, with the Bandon being in the center and bring the power into Bandon because it has a more direct route to the Central Valley. But now they've pulled that Bandon area out. So I don't know. I haven't heard anything lately about that, except a little bird whispered in my ear that this one was going to go to California.
So
it's going to California unless we want to pay for it to come here also. He says that they don't get involved in it. They put it out, and they've already negotiated having it in California. So, but there's no answer to why they don't have it in California. It's got waters there. It's windy there.
Well, the stuff that I've seen, they do have some. I mean, there's...
In the water?
Oh, yeah. There's three of them off of the Monterey area that are currently selling right now. They're leasing them.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing north. So, I mean, it's coming. And again, if I wanted to make a ton of money and I was young, I would figure out how to get permits and I'd go to work for them. Because the people that I saw in the gold mining business that had the best job in the world were the people that said, I'm a permit expert, you let me get the permits for you. That's going to be that's the jelly in this whole thing that makes it tough. Because if they don't get a permit to cross state lands or put up whatever infrastructure they need, this thing doesn't go away. So one thing, if you haven't heard them say it yet, that they will say, I think, is we need to do more local education. That's shorthand for we need to contribute to campaign of elected representatives. And once we have them on board, then we can control the narrative, we can control where this went, and that's exactly what they did in Nevada. They I won't use the term bought the legislature, but they financed influential legislators' campaigns when the time came for the state to decide how they were going to tax them. Then they said, okay, folks, we would prefer to be taxed on our net profits and not our gross profits. And that went through. So that's just an example of how this works. You're talking hundreds of billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And And I advise people, I said, you know, I'll tell you right now, you may not like this, the fishermen may not like this, but two things you need to do on the front end is get the mitigation nailed down and don't offer to sell your boat because they will buy them all. Mm-hmm. And then there's no issue. The largest livestock operator in the state of Nevada right now, Newmont Mines, because they went and bought all the ranches that complained. So anyway, let's get back to this. Make a motion that President Richard Heap represent the Port of Brooking Harbor at the upcoming BOEM meeting for functionality of port assets, but not as a pro or con for the port.
Second.
Motion and second. Danielle.
Dan?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
That's now official. I promise you, in no form will I ever represent the court without asking. I may tell them I'm on the port board, but other than that, if they say, well, what's the port's position on this, I'm not going to give it to them.
Yeah, okay. I mean, when you're going there, I'm sorry to even say another word about it, but, you know, I have had little meetings with different offshore wind energy companies, and from what I've heard, Brookings, we're not going to use any of that power. You know, we're currently hooked up to the most efficient power supply there is at the dam. So what initially my reaction was, so we have to give up fishing. We have to possibly look at it. We have to deal with this influx of everything coming. And the thing I made my main question was, you know, they have spoke about community benefits. You know, they talked about that, but what is it? You know, that would be one of my questions. What are we talking that is actually going to benefit, and what other things have they done for other communities to show that benefit? Because that's realistically, I think that the main hurdle is, you know, if this is going to happen, we're not, when we turn on our switch, our power comes on all the same, and it's as cheap and as energy efficient as it can get. So for them, and they've been very, we'll do, you know, lots of stuff. And what is it, you know, what does that mean that what you guys are going to bring for an offset of, you know, using our backyard?
I'll put my energy company hat back on. And here I'll answer your question. So if you are currently a fisherman on a crab boat, you're going to work from October till April. You're going to get paid a share of the proceeds of that boat. You will have no benefits, no coverage, no nothing. If you come to work for our company in the maintenance side, we will, number one, train you. Number two, you will be fully employed year-round. Number three, you're going to have full benefits and you're going to have retirement. Mm-hmm. That's how they sold what they did in Nevada, and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
They hired hundreds of people, high-paying jobs, good benefits, year-round work. They do that. The other thing that they did when they moved in there, and that's part of the net versus gross proceeds, but, for example, little Eureka High School, a town of 500 people, their marching band, or no, I'm sorry, it was Elko. Their marching band was invited to one of the inaugurations. Newmont Gold chartered an airplane, bought them all new uniforms, replaced whatever instruments they needed, flew them back there, put them up in a hotel, and flew them back. So there are benefits. But where they accrue depends. Brookings, you know, the other piece of this, to be quite frank with you, they did wind studies out here, and we do generate a lot of wind. Cape Blanco is our enemy when we're fishing and when we're making wind. Mm-hmm. But we're also the mouse in the corner. So you want to plop this in front of Newport, then you're going to hear about it. But you want to stick it down here in the lower coast where you have three towns that aren't, between all of us, we aren't 50,000. We can squeal and holler and do everything else, but, you know, that's So anyway.
Okay. That's it.
Maintenance wave.
All right. Let's move to information item A.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I wanted to just, have you guys seen the movie, The Thrown to the Wind, about what's happening in the East Coast with the whales?
Mm-hmm. I haven't. I've heard about it. But.
Yeah, it's very good. It's free. It just came on. I watched it, and it's what's going to happen here, just because. So.
Okay. This is FEMA dredging update and schedule. So.
Okay. So I'm going to go down this because it is all pretty relevant. The port's currently has three payment requests in with FEMA totaling $733,382. Payment request approvals have been taken 100 days. Currently, the requests are respectively at 61 and 29 days as of September. FEMA reimbursements are 75% of the cost. Business Oregon will pay the other 25% after FEMA approval. So we have to go through the FEMA process. You know, we have to submit our invoices to them. After they pay it, they approve them, and we get their reimbursements, that's when we can take that chunk and then give it to Business Oregon. Business Oregon heavily relies on FEMA's approval that everything has been done right, and then Business Oregon can expedite our 25% from them. Clamshell dredging contract with Billiter Marine is signed, and they are scheduled to begin dredging at the boatyard on October 15th. The port will be installing turbidity screens around the work area prior to the clamshell work. McLennan excavation contract for the sediment basin construction was signed, but the port had to modify the scope of work to erosion protection. We removed the CMP drain work, and the reduction of work will be reflected in a change order on this contract. The electric dredge was ordered with a wired 50% down payment and scheduled to arrive January 8, 2024. The remaining 50% will be required before the dredge is shipped November 27th. Assembly and dredge training will begin immediately after arrival and continue for 15 days straight. So when he starts, when he comes to start doing the training and the dredge setup, our employees will be working 2 full weeks straight to get in every day of training that we can. The generator was ordered with 25% down payment. It's scheduled to arrive December 11th. The remaining 75% will be required before the generator is shipped November 27th. The HDPE pipe, which is the dredge discharge pipe, that was ordered and is scheduled to arrive October 9th. Port staff will begin training in the pipe welding with the supplier shortly after the delivery. The port will be renting a pipe welding machine, and we were talking about possibly buying one, but we renting it is a cheaper way to go. The sections that we're going to be doing, we're going to start with the sections in Basin 2. And then moving the pieces into Basin 1. We ordered 170 blocks for the sediment, concrete blocks for the sediment storage basin. As of August 24th, 48 blocks were ready to ship. The port is ready to receive. We have received 50 of them, and we have installed those already.
Are these from Tidewater?
Yeah. They're the only one that makes them. The port is anticipating dredging from January 16th to March 15th. Once the dredge sediment is dry enough to handle and determine the quality of the material, the port will work on removal plans. So our first initial is talk to these concrete places, Tidewater, Premade, and see what kind of use or cost saving we can get.
When you're talking quality, you're going to be able to have a determination made about the amount of standstill, et cetera,
anything.
What they may want to know for making concrete.
Yep. Yep. Which, you know, if it'll vary, if it's really good, we might be able to charge for it. You know, if they have room for it and they say, yeah, they'll take it for at zero cost, that's good for us. just so it's out there, we are in our budget that we have left over of the $2.4 million that we're going through, we have budgeted to have all of this material hold off at $10 a yard. So we do have the funds in worst case scenario that you just got to pay and get rid of it. We are prepared for that. We're just hoping we don't have to. And then the last part of it, we Department of State Lands removal fill permit was renewed for the dredging. Questions attached to it is kind of the schedule of what, when we anticipate things to start showing up, how long we anticipate to be on them, and then the map of the dredge sections that we're going to make. So each one of these sections will be slightly different lengths, but they're very specific to where they're going to be at in the marina. We're hoping that we don't really ever, once we install it, we're not planning on moving the pipe ever. Like, it can just stay there until it has to be replaced. It'll be back behind the docks. We'll have to work on cables or something from the bank to help secure it so it's not bouncing back and forth. But being able to keep it in the water and continually use it for when we need it will save a lot of time in the future of breaking that pipe down and rewelding it.
The pipe is plastic, yes or no?
The type of plastic, yeah. High-density polyurethane.
Yeah. They're not metal. They're not welding rolls. Plastic rolls.
Plastic welding, yes.
Fuse. Can you build a cradle or attach to the docks on the inside to just lay it in?
We couldn't. When that pipe filled up with sand and material, it's extremely heavy. And just being in the salt water, it's almost neutral. It's buoyancy, like just the top of the pipe will be right out of the water, but if you put your finger on it, it'll start sinking. It's almost neutral in salt water, but when you put the material through water, the water weight alone, and then the actual material weight, it sinks straight to the bottom. So keeping it up close to the bank, close to the high tide line, and anchoring it there is our current plan. Any other questions on FEMA?
Yeah. Travis?
Yeah.
My question is, are you going to start then on the east side of Basin 2 and work your way around to the west side of Basin 2, or are you going to?
We're going to start at the south end of Basin 2 by the travel lift and the in front of our work dock, the travel lift area, and moving west towards Sea Dock, which is currently closed and where we're going to be doing the clamshell dredging. My goal is to get Sea Dock open by the end of this dredging season, by end of March, so we can start putting fingers back on that and get those dock spaces leased. There's about 18 unused slips there right now.
Wow.
Okay, so the reason I ask is because once we weld that pipe and we start dredging, I mean, it only seems to me to make sense that as you, let's say, go down from Hallmarks towards the travel lift, that you, as you add sections, you would move the dredge down. But now you're talking, you're going to have to split that as you come back towards Hallmarks from the travel lift. Is that correct?
Yes, kind of is what I'm doing is starting with our highest priority of material that needs to get moved out. And as we're going to weld all the pipe, all the sections, everywhere it needs to be, and it's not going to be just one continuous piece. We have what they call bells, which would be transition spots. So we'll be welding lengths that are in the 200, 250-foot neighborhood. So as we come to the section that's going to be dredged between the docks, you know, between, let's just say, between P and Q dock, that section, our pipe will be broke in the middle of those docks, have a bell, to where we just uncouple it, we tie in our dredge pipe, our 300 feet that comes with the dredge, which is a much more flexible piece of pipe, we'll plug into that, we will utilize that, it's so we don't have to, we weld once, and then we just unbolt what we don't need and tie into our flexible pipe with the dredge.
Okay, that's fine. But I was thinking you're going to weld it all the way down through there, and you'd have to go back and break those welds and that. So in essence, you're putting in couplings, but you can break it there. Okay.
That's we're putting in a series of different couplings and joints so we can do each individual area.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay. Okay. Information item B.
Okay, this is kind of an update for the wastewater treatment plant. The EPA awarded the Port Phase 1 engineering and permitting funding in the amount of $513,500. The EPA pays 80%, and the Port is responsible for the other 20%. So with the Phase 1 funding, EPA will be paying up to $410,800. The Port's 20% of Phase 1 would be $102,700.
Okay, so now to be clear, we had this come up earlier. Jack will have a contract with us to do this.
Yes, we're going to have it. I will probably have it for your next meeting.
Okay, so
the contract.
So the contract will be for a total work of $513,000 by his company over time, and we're going to end up paying.
We're not going to end up spending that much. It's just kind of a number EPA chiseled off for us of the. That $3.5 million said you can have this much for
okay.
Phase 1 funding. So any money that we don't spend of that $513 in Phase 1 automatically rolls over into Phase 2.
Well, the point being that this will be a separate contract and we're only going to pay 20% of the cost, of whatever the cost for Jack is.
Yes, but we don't get to use his contract like that. So whatever the whole number is, what he uses, you know, we don't get it only used, you know, count 20% of it towards this contract. You know what I mean? So the whole dollar amount will be, so if we spend $100,000 with Jack on wastewater treatment plant, we will spend $100,000. It's just 20% of that, the Port would actually be responsible for paying. But the same amount, it still counts towards this contract, even though it's reimbursable.
I got it. Well, that's my point, is that we're only paying 20% basically for him.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what we're paying, yes. So we are going to be, with that being said, we've got this budget. We're working on Phase 2, which is the plant design, it says what the parts and pieces are going to be, and civil work, which includes, concrete pouring, the ditches, the storm drains, getting power to it, that part of it. So, I'm hoping we have something to turn in to them. I have another meeting with them on the 22nd. And once we turn that in to them, the budget will be much more precise. We'll know we'll have a project that has been accepted by DEQ and the EPA. And then we're going to have a conversation with Pacific Seafood about matching. We're going to have a whole other talk shortly about matching funds, what we have, what we've spent, and what's kind of left to come. But before I have that conversation with Pacific Seafood, they're already, aware of our number, but I'm trying to get it down. This is the plant we want to use. This is the design. This is how much it's going to cost to the engineer's estimate. This is the commitment I need from you. The decision we're going to have to make is the state local physical recovery fund, if that's going to be counted towards it, the $175,000 that we kept from the property sale, if we're going to contribute that, or if we're going to have to seafood to pay the whole matching fund. Currently, right now, everything that's been paid to date, the 20% the Port has paid. So we already have skin in the game right now for all monies spent towards the wastewater treatment plant to date, the 20%. That's going to be another meeting that we're going to talk a lot more about how we want to do it and how that conversation with Pacific Seafood is going to happen. My goal right now is to get Phase 2 into the EPA and them to accept it, so there's not a whole lot more changes that's going to happen. Things to think about, the $175,000 that we have, that's also money that can go towards our debt, you know, or, you know, anything else. So, not anything. I shouldn't say anything else. It would either go towards our debt or this project. That's our two options with it. So, those are things we got to weigh that we're going to have to talk about. And then we're also going to have to see what, you know, Pacific Seafood is willing to put into it. So, once phase two has been submitted, that's when we're going to have this conversation of what we're going to do with matching funds. Because we can't put anything out to bid, and we can't keep going finding contractors until our funding is completely sewed up.
Do you have a feel from them? Are they pretty receptive to?
Yes, they're very receptive. They know they need it. You know, they know they have a good opportunity sitting in front of them to get one.
But how much are they willing? Do you have a feel for how much they're willing to pay?
Publicly right now, no.
But let's be honest.
I mean,
from the perspective of Pacific Seafood, we did the heavy lift. We got $3.5 million that they would have had to try and find had we not gotten that. So if you put that in perspective with $875,000, you know, I don't know anything about the profit loss. I don't know anything about their operation. But to get a plant that's worth $3.5 million for $875,000 is not a bad deal.
Well, and I think I want to make it clear, too, so the $3.5 million is what EPA was willing to up to $3.5 million. The $875,000 is an option to $3.5 million, so it really makes it a $4.375 million project, just so it's clear. Because the project, the estimated total that we have right now is at $3.9 million. So, and if you look through there, we added contractor profit, remote work site, and then another 10% for contingency on top of that. Trying to build enough into this to have cushions built into it. So, it's where we're at for an update. Do you guys have any questions? I mean, I'm sure Richard's got some.
No, I want to thank you for doing this.
Yeah, a lot of work.
So, you know, we've been, the three of us have been hearing about this forever. And, you know, it's just a lot of stuff. But it's kind of like you're waiting for the report back on your pregnancy exam, are we or aren't we? Well, now here you see it, and you know what's happening. You've got a timeline here, and there's real progress being made. So it's important for us to know that and the public to know that. Because I get asked all the time, well, what's going on with the wastewater treatment plant? Somewhere in limbo, we're working on it. Well, yes, we are working on it. So now we've got a hard and fast thing here that says, okay, here's where we're headed. And I appreciate you doing that. I think it's a great thing for us.
One last thing I want to bring to your attention on the very back page is the layout. It has some red marks in it.
Mm-hmm.
It is slightly different from that you guys have seen before. The problem that we ran into is that the two big tanks that sit there are in direct line of the navigational towers. And then Coast Guard, the navigational towers have, you know, their requirements about what you can put in front of them, line of sight, distance. So we marked in the hashed out parts in red were different areas that we could turn tanks or move them aside from. They were kind of realistic ground that I gave Jack that could be used, you know, for this system to make sure our clearances are met. I just wanted to bring that up that, you know, there could be a slight deviation from the original plan to make sure that the line of sight is maintained for the channel.
That's good because I used it.
It's pretty important. We're kind of looking at it as like, how tall are our tanks? Like, we might be in the way a little bit. So at least we talked to them. The Coast Guard's given us what we need for to plan around the navigational lines. Good thing is it's only line of sight.
Okay.
installed.
So, Travis, when you meet with Pacific Seafood, and I know you're going to take all this to them, and evidently we're going to have to really move forward on this with or without them, according to the way this is written, because if we don't, then we'll have to be responsible for any costs we've incurred up to this point ourselves. And, of course, that would not be a good thing. So I'm hoping that when you do meet with them, that maybe they could give us some form of something in writing of their commitment.
Well, absolutely. And that's exactly what I'm going to be going to them from. But another, you know, part of this is that we've worked with Pacific Seafood. They know what we're doing. You know, they have an idea. But when we get our, once EPA has said, yes, we will accept this, DEQ does, we're going to have a talk with Pacific Seafood, and they're going to need to know what we're doing it because they're running it. Can you run this? You know, is this something that you guys are okay with? So that's where I think that the major partnership comes and getting their opinions on what we have. I have full confidence that Pacific Seafood is in with us on this.
And I don't mind contributing some to it. I mean, we're getting our dock fixed. And on top of that, they're going to be leasing and running the system. So, I mean, it's profitable for us as well. And, you know, work with them. But I just, and they've been very verbal about them, their interests. But I really like to see something substantial.
And, you know, the other thing, obviously, we didn't get the cost share waiver. So, you know, the money that we spent to date, it's going to be hard to have Pacific Seafood reimburse us for those costs. We can pay ourselves back with the money that we have, the $175,000 that we have for matching funds. We can use that, but I'm just holding that kind of in our back pocket right now until this gets ironed out, that if Pacific Seafood takes any the rest of the matching funds for here, I would be inclined to take that $175,000 that we have, pay ourselves back with what we can, and then put the rest of it towards our debt, you know, you can get some more things paid off. So
that sounds really good.
I think we got a reasonable plan going forward.
Good.
This phase two part, I'm hoping to get wrapped up soon.
Well, in the past meetings, we've had some discussion about having an agreement with Pacific Seafood and having it up front. And from my perspective, kind of what I mentioned about being specific on this bone proposal, once you're down to the craft tax, we're going to run this thing now. Here's what it is. Let's get our agreement. That's the time to have the agreement. I think we have a good faith statement from them that they're willing to participate and pay and do all that kind of stuff. That's good to go on. But now we're getting closer to the bottom line.
Right.
But I think this is the appropriate time to do it. What I'm saying is I don't know that we would have been well served to do it too far ahead when we didn't know what we were doing.
And I talked to Dan, who was here, that talked to you guys from Pacific Seafood three or four weeks ago, to give him an update on where it was. And you know, like I said, he gave me a pretty good feeling that they're all for this going forward. He's kind of at the same point I am. He's like, I need something more in my hand, and I told him we're working on it. So, they are awaiting our phone call.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. That brings us to Commissioner's comment.
Commissioner's comment. Larry and I went to SBAO with the staff here. It was really good. It was a good review. And I've been around the fort looking at all the new things that are happening out there with the dewatering area that's coming along, and the staff is doing a really great job. They're working really hard out there because they've put in a lot of hours out there in that dirt, and I thank them.
Same. I'd like to thank staff. I know you all work hard, Travis. We don't say it enough. Thank you for what you're doing. I mean, you're there every day. I mean, again, last meeting, you're out there pulling forms on cement, and 5 minutes later, you're in here running a meeting. So thank you. And just, I noticed we're starting on the old tattoo shop.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Big crew.
Okay. All right, and our next regular meeting will be Wednesday, October 18, 2023 at 2 o'clock in this room. Yeah, I forgot.
Dan, do you have anything? Sorry, we forgot about you.
No, I'm good today, thank you.
Okay, all right, so with that in mind, we will adjourn the meeting.
Goodbye.